welcome to How I Got Hired, a show about ordinary people like you and me and how they created extraordinary success in their career. If you're looking for practical strategies and tactics to build a career and life that you're proud of, you are in the right place, my friend. I'm your host, Sonal Behl, career strategist and founder of Supercharge. At the end of this episode, I want you to walk away with this singular thought. If they could do it, I can do it too. Now, grab your favorite warm beverage and let's get started. Hey there, welcome back to How I Got Hired. So today's episode is part of my series, Where Are They Now? To check up on how some of my past guests are getting on and how sometimes the best laid plans can go differently. And today I'm speaking with Dan Reed on the concept of going back. You know, it's called boomerang employees on LinkedIn. Dan was a guest on the show back in August 2021 on episode 46 called Networking Secrets from the Career Dad. I highly recommend you check that podcast out. I'm not saying you've got to listen to that one to listen to this one. It's not like it's episodes, you know, with like, you know, a series where if you missed one, you don't know what's going on. No, I think you're still welcome to listen to it at some point. Because back then we chatted, I think, Dan, it was around a week after you'd started at Adobe and that was the dream company. And then in January 2022, Dan makes the surprising announcement on LinkedIn that he's going back to his former employer, Barclays Bank. So we've got to figure out what happened and get those lessons from Dan because, you know, a lot of those are applicable to a lot of us in our own career. Hey, Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Who knew that we'd be speaking so soon?
I can bet that you did not know that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, let's pick up where we left off, Dan. So walk us through what happened in these past 5-6 months at Adobe and how it has impacted you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. To preface, and you kind of touched on this, right? Like Adobe for me was the holy grail. It was something that had been a company that I'd actively been wanting to be a part of for years and years. And on when we spoke
said
on the last
3 years, we said
three years, right? Yes. And the way that I got in was by, you know, befriending people, networking, and just keeping up those conversations. And so when it finally happened, it was the dream come true. And I actually think that was part of the problem, in that I had built up this company to be more than it is. And I don't mean that there are issues there, because actually I don't think there are. I just think that no company, no thing can be put on this pedestal of just being almost godlike. Mm. And in my head, that is where it had got to. Mm. And so I think that then there were some, there were a few red flags along the way for me in terms of the type of work that I'd be doing, and I completely ignored them because it was the whole, and I'll touch on what they were, because it's part of the reason that I left. But that was the first problem, is putting something on an unachievable pedestal of what it meant to me. But I guess more practically, I've spent my whole career working client side. So if listeners aren't kind of familiar, generally you're in client side, which is you're working for a business on the further enhancement of that business, or you're working agency tech side where you are servicing those clients, those businesses. And I've spent my whole career working client side for a company, driving that company forward. This was my first adventure into consultancy, into tech vendor, tech sales. And I, again, in my head had built that up as, well, I'm going to be almost like a, a mini employer, mini employee of the companies that I'm consulting to. So let's say there's a big bank that is working with Adobe, and they draft me in 6 to 8 weeks all over the world, get to do loads of funky traveling, and I will sit down with them, understand their problems, go away, come up with a plan, a solution, deliver that to them, everyone high fives, and then we move on to the next one. And I just thought, that sounds fantastic. And I think partly that isn't the reality, and there's a couple of reasons for that. But secondly, even if it was the reality, I learned very quickly that I don't want to be the person who's talking about these strategies and then and getting buy-in for them and then moving on to the next one. I was coming up with these strategies thinking, I want to be on the other end. I want to deliver. I want that ownership. I want to see something through through multiple iterations and for a number of years.
Because you knew what you're missing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I just thought, how is that ever going to go away? And I spoke to a number of people, both within Adobe and outside of Adobe, that had done that move client side to tech, and said, look, how did you find it? And there was a range of answers, from love it, never looking back, to, you know, there was one person who was inside, and they've been with Adobe for a long time now, but they said the first year and a half was incredibly difficult, and I didn't know if I'd liked it. And I just thought, I can't do that for a year and a half. Like, that's such a long time to, and
life,
at the time,
life is short.
Life is short. And it kind of, so it had got to the point where I wasn't sure if I actually liked that type of work anyway. And I knew what I was missing client side. But then also, and I talked about this kind of with my team and peers at Adobe, but the role that I was doing was so new in that area, and there was only really me focusing on it, and it was quite hard to kind of find my tribe of kind of, you know, who are my people who are going to help drive this forward. That was quite a difficult thing.
Was it a new position then, or yeah, were you a replacement?
It was a brand new position. And it was a brand new position that was trying something brand new as well. So again, super exciting, but I think compounded with, you know, if you look at new position, doing a new thing, understanding who my tribe are to help drive it forward, questioning whether I'm any good at this type of work, and then questioning whether I like it. It was just too much. And I basically was starting every morning going, I don't know what I'm doing. And I was pretty open and honest with my management team, and saying, like, I don't know if I'm getting this. I don't know. And the feedback was great. That almost made it worse, because the feedback was, you're doing a great job, keep on. And I'm thinking, but I don't know what I'm doing. Like, how, if this is a great job, I'm questioning myself every single morning as to whether, like, what. Yeah, it was hard, and it took a real mental toll. I went to see, I think last time we talked, I might have mentioned about, like, having CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, for to do with family issues. Yeah. I went to see that guy purely about work. I've never done that. Yeah. And it was, I don't know how I feel about this, but I was getting, just outside of work, I was getting more irritable. Mm-hmm. I was short tempered. I wasn't liking, I was very emotional. Just sometimes would just start crying for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I went to go see my old therapist. And he was like, I don't think you're there, but this isn't too far away from depression. Like, you need to be just careful. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of at that point where all of these things had kind of come together, and I'd listened to people saying, yeah, the first year and a half is tough. And I'm thinking, I'm 3 or 4 months in, and this is how it makes me feel. again, nothing because not because Adobe did anything wrong, but just it wasn't the right environment for me. And I just thought I either suck it up and try and see it through. That's not me. That's never been me. Or I need to do something about it. And so let's do something about it because it's just not worth it.
Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing, Dan, with a lot of honesty. And I can even detect it in your voice, right? I mean, even though it's been a few weeks since you made this decision, it's still pretty recent, right?
It's very recent. And I mean, when I started in the start of July, I think by mid-September was probably the first time that I said to my wife, I don't know if I'm enjoying this.
Mm.
And her response was, I'm so pleased that you've admitted that to yourself, because she'd been sort of watching in silence.
She could see it. I was actually going to ask you, you jumped ahead. I was going to ask you, because we make these kind of decisions. These are not solitary decisions, right? I mean, when we're living with our family. So she was obviously supportive.
I think. Oh, massively, massively. I think where... where we kind of differ is still, even when I'm in this place of like, I don't know how I'm going to move past this, I still have that super optimistic streak of knowing, I know that this will be a thing in the past at some point. And so let me focus on that and let me spend my energy on getting to that place, as opposed to spending my energy being concerned that I am where I am now, mentally, emotionally, and all of that. So I think her view was, yes, it's not right for you. It's a shame, because actually Adobe is probably one of the best places that I've ever worked from an employee kind of, but what they do for employees is nuts. I've never had more holiday or annual leave than I've ever.
You know what? That sounds so hard, what you did, because... it's so shiny, the name, and you had put it on a pedestal for so long, and everyone was like, you put out this teaser campaign, can you guess where I'm going? And everyone was like, I could sense how jealous they were, because it will be such a great name, and everyone's so happy for you. But this is exactly why I like how you started the conversation. No one and no organization deserves to be put up on a pedestal like that. No. And I'm so sick to death of seeing these entrepreneur and leadership lists that start with Elon Musk and Richard Branson and Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. Firstly, they're all men. Secondly, they're human. They're human.
Yeah,
we're all flawed. And no one talks about all the failures and all the self-doubt they've been through and they're still going through. People just want to that hero worship thing is so dangerous.
Yeah.
So this is such a good call out for anyone listening today. You know, for example, FANG companies, Facebook, Apple, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Amazon, Google. Mm. Those are the best places to work for. For every three people who say it's great, the others will say, hey, you know, it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So it's so important that, you know, you're open-minded. And the juicy, meaty thing is always the position. Is the position exciting? And you're saying, like, you know, it also could have been seductive, right, Dan? Like, Adobe, I mean, I'll do whatever. Adobe, And this is where I differ from this, I think it's either Eric Schmidt or Sheryl Sandberg, one of the two, who said, when you're being offered a ride on a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on. Maybe you should ask what seat.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is where, again, before I joined and I'd gone through the interview process and I was talking to my wife about, oh, this is what I'm going to be doing. And she was like, is that you? Is that what you want to be doing?
Dude, you got to listen to her. You got to listen to her more.
I know. But the problem is, and she recognized this as well, is because... if we go back to that, where I positioned on the pedestal, she could have said anything and I'd have ignored it because it didn't compute with what was in my head. And this is, and we've had some really, you know, kind of open, honest conversations about this as a couple. And she, especially when I was in a really bad place, she was saying, you know, she felt guilty that she didn't do more to try and put these, you know, make me aware of these flags. And I'm saying you couldn't have done anything. You couldn't, you could have said, you know, you have to have your right arm amputated. And I go, that seems fair. There's probably a reason for that. But you're right. And I completely agree with you. And I think part of it is I did get swept up in that. I got swept up in, you know, that Adobe are constantly on, you know, number one in the best companies to work for. From an employee perspective, I was going to be a consultant, and not just a consultant, a strategic consultant, but not just a strategic consultant, focusing on digital strategy, you know, flying all over the world with an all expenses card to go do what, you know, what's not to like?
No.
Well,
no,
actually, no. What's not to like for me is when I'm spending my time reading 300 page documents to try and figure out what a company strategy could be to build up a narrative around that. That's not for me.
Yeah.
So you're right. Yeah. Always ask what seat you're in.
I hope the listener understands how difficult this conversation can feel for Dan. So Dan, I salute you for coming out like this, because, you know, when you're talking about like, this is on me, you know, and someone close to us says, hey, I wish I could have done more to help you. It wasn't their battle to fight. Yours. And taking accountability and to some extent eating humble pie like this, particularly as someone who's active on social media, you know, there's always that little voice that maybe you shouldn't have announced it. And how is it going to look on your resume?
Yeah.
What if you need to put yourself out in the job market? And we're going to get to that. That's not easy. And when I reached out to you, you were like, sure, happy to talk. I have to say, I was very pleasantly surprised that you agreed. So really, really hats off. And the other thing I want to say is, please, 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 to any lovely person listening today, do not ignore the red flags. They are there for a reason. Whether you are starting a new relationship, whether you're starting a new position in a company, there's very similar. The first 2-3 months, you know, once the honeymoon period is over and the rose-tinted glasses have come off, you're like, what? You know, I mean, I don't like this the way this person leaves the kitchen. And similarly, really? We have to prepare 300 pages before an important meeting? Yeah. I don't know if I'm that person. So it's like, you know, the voice says, shh, keep quiet. You should be so grateful that you're here.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can shut that voice.
Yeah. No, 100%. And it's quite funny because, you know, you mentioned about, you know, oh, where am I going? Is it Adobe? Is it Peloton? You know, I'm sat here in my Peloton hood, you know, jumper now, you know, I'm still very, very close to that brand. And one of the questions that I had when this all played out, I'm back at Barclays, someone said to me, do you regret kind of going all out as you did now that it hasn't worked out? And should you have done it differently? And my answer to that was kind of twofold, that probably, yes, I should have done it differently, but I can't. Because that's who I am. So I have to acknowledge that sometimes it doesn't work out, but all I can do, and the reason, you know, I wanted to sit down and talk to you today, all I can do is own it. Because that's it. And when it came to the point where I knew that Adobe wasn't really for me in the type of work that I was doing, I talked to a couple of kind of close friends internally about what are the options to move internally. It's very hard to do really anywhere in fewer than 12 months within an organization. That also opens up the can of worms of, you know, to your management, how, you know, things aren't working. And it was incredibly hard to know how to play that forward, because I couldn't just slap on a LinkedIn open to work. Because, you know, I've got quite a few friends in the recruitment space. I just talked to them, not say, hey, have you got any jobs? But look, this is my situation. What do you think? And they all said, if you put open to work on your profile, you'd have a job by, you know, the end of the week. But that wasn't something I was prepared to do. And also, having made that move from Barclays, and I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, leaving there, going back, I didn't want to, you know, jump out of the frying pan into the fire. I didn't want to leave Adobe in the headspace of I need to get client side, go anywhere client side, and then be like, ooh, is this the right move? Because I think having a blip on your CV of, you know, 8 years at Barclays, 6 months at Adobe, and then now somewhere else, for me, Barclays again. But that period of time really has to be a little bit longer than eight. But, you know, if it's 2 months and then I'm looking again, what's going on? That's then a more difficult narrative, I think.
I would be curious if I saw a resume like, you know, 7 8 years in one company, 6 months and 7 8 years back in that company. Obviously, we don't know how long you're going to be in Barclays, but it all comes down to messaging. And I think minds are changing ever so slightly. They are a little bit. And you're very right. Would I have done it differently? Yes. I mean, yeah, that takes guts again. That takes gumption to say, but I can't. So let's be pragmatic and why stay there? So my gosh, what a journey. We were talking backstage. In the meantime, you've got lots of domestic drama going on with a move and, you know, two little kids and goodness me. So here we are today, and talk to us about your first reaction. You said Barclays, and you were like, no, frying pan to the fire. So obviously something happened to change your mind.
Yeah, well, that was more, you know, I'd spoken to a few people across lots of different industries to just, I basically wanted to do my own customer research on me. Is this is my narrative. I was at Barclays for 8 years. I genuinely loved it. You know, we talked on the last podcast about how difficult it was a decision to leave.
You spoke very fondly of your time.
Yeah, I wasn't running away from anything. There wasn't anything that was terrible that I wanted to put behind. I loved the company and I loved my job. And the reason I left is because the pedestal and the opportunity seemed so good that I just couldn't turn it down.
Too good to pass up.
And, yeah. Exactly. And so the narrative that I wanted to sense check with people was the truth, that it was a very hard decision to leave Barclays. I left it to do this thing that I thought that I would love, and I don't. And so I've realized that I can either sit it out to an acceptable period of time for a CV to then move on and be pretty unhappy, or I can do something proactive about it, knowing what I don't like as well as what I do like, and add value to an organization. And that was the narrative I was testing with people. And every single person said, yes, that is completely acceptable, that I would not be concerned if you articulated it in the way that you just had. And so that's when I started. I did have, you know, I had some interviews at some of the companies. I didn't feel they were quite right. And that's what I kind of meant about jumping out the frying pan into the fire. I didn't want to go to an unknown place where it may or may not be better. And so this is then when I had a conversation again with my wife and said, I want to go back to Barclays. I don't necessarily want to go back to my old role. That actually isn't an option, even if I did, but I want to go to do something new, but I like the organization. I like the people. I know what I'm doing. That's what I want to do. And that was a tough decision because that meant laser-like focus. That was, again, that's the company I want to work for. Do I ignore everything else? And that might take time because I'm narrowing my scope to one. And so that's what I decided to do. And so I unashamedly used my network. Absolutely. It was insane. Every single person who had some potential of influence to know what was going on at the ground at a director level and above, I messaged and said, yeah.
And said,
So I'm really struggling with this move. And these were people I knew, right? Like, yeah. I wasn't just going through a phone book and going, oh, they're senior, I'm going to contact. No. These were people I knew.
These are warm contacts.
These are people that I've worked with for years and years. And said, hey, so this is what's going on. In a sentence, this is what's going on. I'm happy to talk about the detail, but the upshot is I want to come back to Barclays. What have you heard? Who should I be speaking to? And thankfully, you know, I think I mentioned on the last episode that we did, my exit interview that I had, the man doing that, very, very senior within the organization, and he'd always had a lot of time for me. We'd always got on, and he'd been impressed by the way that I'd left the organization as well as what I'd done when I was there. And so again, I messaged him. And I think really importantly for your listeners as well, not with a, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for advice. And even if there is a job, I don't want to be handed anything. I want to earn it. I just want to let people know that I am in the market.
Yes.
That is it. And so the long story short is, you know, I actually was really humbled by very senior people giving me their time, like an hour on a video call to talk through what's going on, who I should be speaking to. It kind of ended up that there were a few roles coming up in the area that I'm now in. Spoke to the managing director of that area to say, look, this is what's happened, this is what I'm looking for. He put me in touch with a couple of his directors that were both looking for roles. There were open roles that were out there in the wider world. And we just had a conversation that then led to an interview process, and then that led to an offer. And then I'm kind of back. So it's you know, I'm back in the same business area, but not within a marketing function. I'm now in a digital data and analytics function. I love it. I'm not even 2 weeks in, but I think I'm managing a team again, which I love. I own products again, which I love. But I think the really important thing, and this has taken, maybe today is the real first day where this has happened. Even joining back at Barclays, every morning I'd started the day thinking, can I do this? Because that's what I'd done at Adobe for 6 or 7 months. And I'd end each day thinking, oh, this kind of makes a bit more sense. But then the next morning, anxiety, you know, doubt, imposter syndrome, all of those things. And today really is the first day where I've not felt a kind of, even a tiny bit of dread. And that makes me, I already feel much more comfortable in less than 2 weeks here than I did, you know, 6, 7 months at Adobe, purely based on me knowing what's going on and knowing how to drive things and what it is that we're trying to do.
You're home. It's very different. It's even though it may be a different room in the house, it's still the same house.
Yes.
The names, the abbreviations, the vocabulary, the jargon. Ooh. It's familiar. So
this is a really interesting thing, because it's, some of it is and some of it really isn't.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I've really put that pressure on myself. Well, I was here for 8 years. I shouldn't really need to be asking questions. That's ridiculous. That's stupid anyway, even if I'd never moved jobs. But it's I've had to get really comfortable in doing that again. And I liken it to, you know, this, you can see, you know, guitars and drums and stuff in the background. It's almost like self-learning the guitar, right? Like, I know some absolute power riffs, but I might not know the A chord. And that's where I'm kind of at. It's like, yeah, oh, you're talking about all these acronyms, these business units and stuff. Oh, I get how that works. I know those processes, but you're talking about this super simple thing over there. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, no, very much. Like you said, same house, different room, very different map in this room. Don't really know how things work. And when you feel comfortable and safe enough to ask for something, ask for help and not necessarily worry, because, you know, it's very different when you're in a new company, right?
Yeah.
Here, it's very important, that judgment part. My goodness, this is such a precious lesson, right? Waking up every morning with dread.
Mm.
I know this, Dan. I've lived through it. It is not a way to live.
No.
So eventually, if one of my listeners, if you're going through this right now, eventually it's a matter of time. It's going to get to you, right? And it's going to get to you in ways, ugly, incomprehensible ways.
Yeah.
Dan and I were chatting about it at the back, physical health, mental health, what we're putting in our bodies to cope. Those are not things you read about in beautiful leadership books and motivational videos and TED Talks and Instagram. Those are things that are dark, and people would rather that, you know, they slide all of that under the carpet.
Yeah. And that's where I kind of take that different approach, because I'm quite open about all of those things, because I think they're important. And
yes.
And you're right, you know, my mental health massively suffered during this time, and I've historically had a huge problem with food. I've been morbidly obese in the past, lost a lot of weight, but I started putting a lot of it back on, and in the 6 months that I was at Adobe, put on about 20 pounds, so about stone and a half or so. I've now lost again like 14 of those pounds, so I'm still up on where I was, but it's because I didn't find the time to exercise, even though I had a lot more time, because again, Adobe is not a very meeting heavy culture, which is great. So you have more time in your day, but I was spending that time either trying to understand things or worrying that I didn't understand things. So the idea of, well, I'm going to spend half an hour doing a bike ride. Well, I can't, because I don't understand what I'm doing. I can't take
no,
that
very
time.
Much, very much.
So that, and then the thing that was comforting to me was eating and drinking. So I've always ate, obviously, and I've always drank, but it's since losing the weight, it had been in moderation, and I would track, like calorie track what I'm doing and making sure. And, you know, up until this move, both house move and job move, I was in the best like physical shape of my life. And then, you know, fast forward to just after Christmas, and I'm in the worst that I've been in about 3 or 4 years.
Our body doesn't lie.
No. And you know, it just fed into that narrative. And I think that, you know, post Christmas, I'd handed in my notice at Adobe just before Christmas. I knew I was coming back to something familiar but unfamiliar. And that was a real pause moment to go, let's start caring. But it's even silly things like I'd stopped flossing every night, and it's like, why? Like, do you care about yourself or not? And so, yeah, I just started.
Like I think, like your therapist said, it was borderline, bordering on depression. So
I think so.
I totally understand that, you know, and you know, you mentioned a very interesting word when you said you reached out to your old network, your warm network, people you knew in Barclays. You used the word unashamedly. Mm-hmm. So why would there be any shame to begin with? Because I'm asking on behalf of that listener that I know they're experiencing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the simple answer to your question is that there shouldn't and there isn't. But I think the narrative we build up in our own head is very different. And so the reason that I said unashamedly is because, whether it's, you know, our elders or the societal view should be, well, you shouldn't really complain about this. You're in a top company. You should just suck it up. And also, you shouldn't lose face. What are people going to think when you go back to, you know, and also, there's kind of, I don't know whether it's a very British thing, but you don't ask for help. You don't say, hey, I'm struggling with this and I'd appreciate some of your time if you're willing to give it to me. And I had to battle all of those things internally. And I also spoke to my wife about it. And then it got to the point where I thought, what do I have to lose? And so, yeah, I turned into like a production system of, okay, here are my people. Here is my message. Go. And you know, I think that you almost have to be unashamedly. It has to be, this is me. And, you know, some people didn't get back to me. Some people said, you know, I'll keep you in mind and that. But then some people said, oh my goodness, if there's the, you know, and this is going to sound really egotistical, but I'm talking as the message that I received was, oh my goodness, if there's a chance to get you back into this organization, I'm on board. Like, how do I help you?
And
I think that if I had been a bit more reserved, I might not have. The interesting thing, and this is where Career Dad kind of comes into it, is the way that I actually, the snowball started to roll was speaking to someone who I know, and we've worked together a little bit and we've had a couple of coffees, but I only met him because this was years ago. He's at Barclays as well, obviously. But he just returned from paternity leave and knew about Career Dad, and he'd just been promoted and wanted to talk to me about kind of like my take on, you know, career, parenting and all of that. And that's how we met. And when I then went to him and said, hey, you know, I hope family's well, this is where I'm at, he was the person who then put me in touch with the next person who put me in touch with the next person that kind of got to where we are now.
Aww.
And so it's kind of like twofold, I think, for the listeners, for your listeners is one, he could have easily been someone that I didn't reach out to. And that's why I say unashamedly, anyone is worth, you know, who is in your network, who is your friend, reach out to them.
Yes.
And secondly, I often get this question of, you know, do you think Career Dad could be a hindrance to your actual career? People might think, you know, why are you doing this? And I've always said, I think that they're not mutually exclusive,
yeah.
but they work in parallel. And I think that this is a perfect example of that,
yeah.
because I would not have even known this guy if it wasn't for Career Dad.
Career Dad saved the day. Hooray. No, my goodness. My goodness. Firstly, what are people going to say is so legitimate. I think this transcends all cultures. Like we all think about the Joneses. And here in your case, Dan, it's not just people who know me and like me and respect me in Barclays.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to think? Like you said, unashamedly, but also people who don't know me, total strangers, mm-hmm. right? When we're out there on social media, we do kind of attract a certain tribe. Some will have things to say about us. Others will, you know, gravitate towards us. So there is that sort of fear mentality. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that you brought up this last point, because honestly, there is no place for ego and shame in a career transition. And the sooner we can just learn that, the better it is for not just us, but everyone around us.
Yeah, it's so true. Because what are the options, right?
Mm.
You can save face and be genuinely miserable.
The options are just be miserable. And
yeah.
like somebody said, right? Suck it up for 18 months.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy heck, no way. I'm out of here.
And even my wife, when we were having the conversations about, okay, this isn't good for my mental health, it's not good for my, you know, I know what I need to do, I need to move on. Even my wife was saying, this could take time. Like, you have to be prepared that this isn't going to happen for you for, you know, till the summer of 22, till the end of 22. And I just thought, I can't. I can't.
You said, watch me.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, I have a different view. And,
yeah.
and some of it was, you know, it just happened that they were hiring for these roles as well. And they were at the start of the interview process. I get
timing.
All that.
Yeah.
Timing. But I just, you know, we'd even had conversations of if you're this unhappy, you know, we'd moved house, we'd got a lump sum of money that we're using to kind of renovate this house. And there was a conversation of do you quit and live off that money if it's making you that miserable? And, you know, I said, yeah, but then I just have a whole host of other problems, which is that going to pressure me into finding anything? The money that then we have to do the house, I'll be always worried that I ate into that. And so, yeah, the decision was just focus on doing as good a job as I can do whilst I'm still there. Because they still pay me to do a job, right? And I think that was the one thing whilst I was still going through this, even in my head, I was constantly checking in. Are you happy with my work? Do you, you know, and the feedback was always good. So I thought, well, I'm doing what their expectation is of me. So I'm not letting them down. It's just, there's a real, there's just something that's broken between their expectation and my expectation of myself.
And it's that Venn diagram, right? Mm. When the two don't come together and there is no sweet spot in the middle. Yeah. There's something wrong there. You know, speaking of boomerang and coming back, Dan, we chatted before. It's obviously not for everyone. There's some factors that can help, for example, not burning bridges. Share with the listener one or two other things that, you know, we talked about network and not having any shame or ego. Any other things that can help someone who's potentially dabbling with the idea after listening to this conversation about an old former employer and how good those days used to be.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there's, outside of everything that we've talked about, there's just one for me, which is, why did you leave?
Yes.
Because if, and this was when I was having the conversations about going back, you know, even with my new manager and the new head of the department, that came up. Like, have the reasons that you left been abated? Because otherwise they're still going to be there. And I think what was on my side in particular is that even when I was leaving, I was saying, I'm so torn about this. I'm not leaving anything, that's bad. So that really helped me personally in that conversation. But I think for your listeners, it is just really, and again, putting ego to one side and putting the pedestal of where you're at and what you're doing to one side. Why did you leave where you left? And if you went back, would you run into those problems again? Now, that could be a managerial thing. It could be a company culture thing. I don't know. But if you're just going to end up in the same position, that's probably not a reason to go back.
No, and watch out, because those reasons don't disappear. If you left because of a manager or an environment or a culture, deep-rooted things, those are hard to fix unless that person in question or the root problem has magically been solved, which magically we all know none of that happens. So that's a great point. And it's the same for relationships, right? Why did you break up in the first place? Why are you going back to that person?
Exactly. And this is the funny thing. And I probably shouldn't say this, because we're still meant to keep our career cards close to our chest in some way. But on the whole personal, professional level, so my now wife, we dated at university for a year, and then we broke up for 2 years. And then after university is when we started dating again. And it was funny, because when we first started dating again, we're both in our, you know, like 21 or 22 or whatever. And I remember saying to my best friend at the time, it's like, if we actually get back together in a relationship properly, like, I think this is it, because we've both seen the best and worst of each other. And we know what went wrong in the relationship last time. We've addressed that now. And so.
And we missed the absence.
Absolutely. And I remember I remember as clear as day, sitting in his parents' living room, because we're in our 20s, and saying, if we get back together, this is the whole marriage, kids, like, this is it. And, you know, so far that's where we're at. And I feel, this is the bit I shouldn't say, I feel the same
say
with Barclays.
Say it.
I feel the same with Barclays. It's like, because another question I've had is, do you wish you hadn't left? And part of me, absolutely. But part of me, I'm glad I did. And the reason for that is because Adobe was on this pedestal. It was an itch I had to scratch. I had to experience it. And if I wouldn't have done it, I think that anything that I would have done in Barclays or elsewhere afterwards, I'd have always thought, what would it have been like if I'd have done that? Now I've done it.
Now you know.
Now I know. It's not for me. It is for tons of people. It's still a fantastic company. It's just not for me. And so I can be in Barclays, which I know is for me. I can fully focus on that and not looking at, oh, what if? And I think in the long run, that will give me a more rewarding career.
Yep. Yep.
But I can imagine not leaving. I can imagine them wheeling me out the door. And that's probably something that I shouldn't be, you know, as a, you know, mid-30s, mid-senior management. Like, yeah, you're meant to play your cards, you know, close to your chest to make sure that
time,
the advantage
time will doesn't. Time will yeah. tell. But I really appreciate that Barclays is, as a bank, is, you know, open and they really promote their employees speaking out on social media.
Absolutely.
It's such a win-win. So many companies still don't get that.
Yeah.
The way you're describing Adobe makes me almost giggle, in the sense that it was this itch I had to scratch. Like, I totally get it. It's like this there was this affair. I just had to get it out of my system.
Yeah.
I've done it.
Yeah.
I'm back to my married wife, and my wife's name is Barclays.
it is a bit like that, which, you know, is pretty horrible analogy, but it's true. And I think that I'm also, and I kind of touched on this briefly, I'm really pleased to not be going back to my old role, which is hard because I loved it. And it was new. We were setting up something. But I think that would have been, in my head, that might have even been a harder transition of leaving something and going back to the same
thing. Were you replaced back then?
Oh, I was replaced as well.
Yeah, another reason
and
it's hard.
And the person who replaced me is a colleague who I've worked with for years, but also a friend. Like, we would hang out outside of work. I don't want to do that, but I'm really pleased to be able to go into something new and so it feels new. It feels like
a fresh start.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Hey, Dan, this has been so insightful. I will link the CareerDad podcast and your LinkedIn URL in the show notes. I know the podcast is in for a new season. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to. So this is the other thing that I just felt so CareerDad took a real hit because I just didn't have the confidence to be talking about that. And now, yeah, I've got an idea for kind of a new season. So I just need to figure out, you know, we're at the stage where my daughter doesn't really sleep. So when am I going to record? But yeah, I am looking to do a new season, which would be fabulous.
Okay, exciting. I can't wait,
Dan,
to see how it goes. And thank you so much for sharing your journey with us and for your honesty and transparency. You're a force. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, you made it till the end. That shows that you care about your career, and that means we need to hang out a little bit more. So just a couple of things. A new podcast episode is dropped every single Monday. Wednesday, I take out one email which relates to your career and absolute amazing insights that I only share on email. So if you want to subscribe, go to the link in my show notes. That's superchargeyourself.com/newsletter. And finally, did you know I hang out on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook live every single Friday at 2 p.m. Central European time. So you are more than welcome to join me. Just follow the links in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this episode, maybe share it with three of your closest friends. And if you're feeling even more generous, leave me a fabulous review on Apple Podcasts. That really, really helps the discoverability of the show. So thank you so much for listening. Take care of yourself. And until next time, bye for now. Thank you.